flexibility, convenience, opportunity. Find your digital advantage in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, visit KeenelandDigital.com to learn more.
Good morning. It is 9:06 Wednesday, December 1st. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. Feels so good to be out of my vacation sweats and into my work pajamas. Hey, guys.
Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News, welcoming back Joe Bianca. Congratulations to Met fans. Max Scherzer, $43 million a year. My goodness.
Yeah, that's almost Bill Finley money, the way if you break it out per start. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And Bill, you're right. We got an ace, you know, pitcher. We got a couple of new hitters just in time for the lockout.
No way.
Typical Mets.
No way they're locking out with all this money that's getting thrown around, right?
I know. It's crazy. It is crazy. But that's modern day sports for you.
As you can hear, I don't feel great. I have a little bit of a sore throat here. So it might just be like last week where Bill and John talk and I listen. Who knows? The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Mark your calendars for the January Horses of All Ages sale, which begins January 10th, 2022. You can visit january.keeneland.com to learn more. So we really have like two big weekends left for the year. We had last weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, and then we have this weekend with the big Cigar Mile Day card at Aqueduct. Churchill and Del Mar took the center stage last weekend. I was kind of in and out paying a little bit of attention last week. So I'm going to toss it to Bill and John and hear what their thoughts were from the big races.
Yeah, I mean, a couple stories over the weekend. On Friday, Max Gild won again, winning the Clark. His second grade one in his career, 5-for-5 at Churchill Downs, and he now goes off the stud. Originally, when they decided not to run this horse in the Breeders' Cup Classic, I was kind of questioning the decision. I mean, why wouldn't you want to go for the big one, the huge purse, the glory and everything? But they obviously made the right decision. I think they knew Maxfield would not win the Breeders' Cup Classic. They also had Essential Quality in there, being Godolphin. And so now he goes out with a nice win. But, you know, this horse's history will be he was always in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was a very good horse, but he missed the breed, never ran in the Breeders' Cup, never ran in the Triple Crown races, and had to, make his name for himself in races like the Clark. But nonetheless, a good way to go out on Friday at Churchill Downs. And John, before I throw to any of the other races, the Saturdays or whatever, let's get your reflections first.
Well, I think, you know, out of the three of us, I've always been the strongest fan of Maxfield. Not only because of his breeding, but because of the way he looks. I mean, he was just an outstanding looking athlete and the kind of horse that you want to root for. That being said, he missed almost all of his 3-year-old year, like you mentioned, and came back and ran really well in spots, you know, where he was placed. Did he go against the big dogs? Not all the time, but he does have a grade one next to his name. He's got a bunch of placing in grade one and grade twos. And, you know, we're happy to be breeding two mares to him because I think just as a stallion prospect, he's what you look for. He checks all the boxes. He's royally bred, beautiful, beautiful mover and good looking confirmation. He's got size. He's like 16'2". I don't know if it was just because it was the night air at Churchill, you know, when he ran in the Clark, but it looked like literally he was breathing fire. I mean, he was just so pumped up and ready to go into the paddock and into the gate. And it was just, that's what I'll always remember Maxfield like. And the reason why I say that I'm probably his biggest fan of the three of us is there've been times where we've talked about the fact that maybe he's more of a grinder. Maybe he's more of kind of a one speed type horse that gets going as the races start going 8, 9, 10 furlongs. So he doesn't have that brilliance. He's not like a Jackie's Warrior or a Life is Good or even a, dare I say, Gamine, a horse that's going to break to the front and just run everyone off their feet and have you go, oh my God, he went, 21 and change and 44. That's not him. That's not Maxfield. That's not what he's bred to do. That's not the way he looks. And that wasn't his racing style. But again, I think that he's going to be an outstanding talent for not only, as a stallion prospect, and we're breeding two of our mares to him because I really feel that he's got that kind of quality. And I think Darley did the right thing by placing him, at $40,000 as opposed to 50, 60 and trying to get the last dollar on the table. I think they made it very appealing for breeders and they're going to be I know they're oversubscribed for him.
Yeah, and I expect him to be popular, but it'd be hard to charge $60,000 for a horse that, you know, ducked the Breeders' Cup to run in the Clark. I think, like Bill said, it was the right decision. He never could really factor against the top horses this year as a 4-year-old. And I gotta say that that's a little bit of a disappointment, because he was so promising as a 2-year-old, as a 3-year-old. Obviously, he had his injury issues. I think Brendan Walsh did a great job to get him back to the races at all as a 4-year-old. And it was nice that they brought him back and had at least a full campaign as a 4-year-old. But at the end of the day, I think we expected him to win several grade ones this year. And, you know, he did get the Clark in the end. It was only a 99 buyer. So he's a nice horse, but I think we all expected more at the beginning of 2021 from Maxfield. Just some of the other results from the weekend. You know, we had En Vuitton, who had a big win in the Fall City. We talked to Kenny McPeak. You know, the plan with her was to breed her to Gunrunner if she didn't run that well. She won by 6 lengths. Ironically, she won by 6 lengths last year in the Fall City. So it sounds like she's going to be back for a 5-year-old year now. And Kenny McPeak, honestly, there were two human stories from the weekend, and they were Kenny McPeak and Kent DeSormo. Now, McPeak had a great day on the Stars of Tomorrow card. Like I said, we're going to talk to him a little bit. He had 4 winners on Saturday. He had the Kentucky Jockey Club win with Smile Happy, another son of Run Happy. Those Run Happies are starting to get really good. And he had two blowout. I don't know if I've ever seen this. Back-to-back, two blowout maiden winners at 21-1 and 26-1. Both same trainer, same jockey, both won off by like 7-9 lengths. And they were really, really impressive, especially Cocktail Moments. The second horse was a daughter of Uncle Mo. If you haven't seen that replay, go watch it. She was crazy, crazy impressive. But you hardly ever see that. The double paid $1,000. I hope Kenny had a couple bucks on it, because that was pretty impressive. And then Kent DeSormo, you know, Kent is like, I feel like everybody in racing has like a love-hate relationship with Kent DeSormo. I know I sure do. Because when he's on his game and when he's riding, you know, clear-headed and just ready to roll every single day, I don't know that there's 5 jockeys in America who are better than him pound for pound. He can do it all. He can go to the front. He can lay back and make one run. He can save ground. He can tip wide. He doesn't get in traffic trouble all that often when he's red hot. And then sometimes he just goes on walkabouts, and for weeks or months at a time, he wins 2-3 races and he stops trying. And he's, you know, that's the thing that I think drives people crazy about him, is I've seen so many races where Kent, if he can't get the win, he stops trying and he doesn't even try to get second or third or fourth. And to me, that's always been unacceptable as a rider, but it's so frustrating because he's so good when he wants to be, and when he puts his mind to it. And this weekend was a perfect example of that. Great ride on Beyond Brilliant in the Hollywood Derby. He also won the Hollywood Turf Cup with Say the Word. He had a bunch of other wins over the weekend. And I always just wonder, like, how long can he keep this together? How long can he stay on a straight and narrow and, you know, be focused in 100% on winning races and being an elite jockey? Because he certainly has the talent, even here at his advanced age, he certainly has the talent to go toe-to-toe with anybody in America. It's just so frustrating. He's a very frustrating. It's like a baseball player or a basketball player has like a year or two, great stats, you know, is just killing the league. And then just kind of becomes disinterested for a couple of years. And you think, you know, what a waste of talent and ability. And that's been my feeling on Kent DeSormo. Obviously, he's in Hall of Fame, so his legacy is, you know, completely set in that way. But I think that especially the last 20 years or so, there's just been a lot of ups and downs with Kent DeSormo where there didn't necessarily have to be. But this weekend reminded people how good he is when he's on his game. Wonder if you guys had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I want to get back to DeSormo, but first I want to talk a little bit more about the races on Saturday. And Mattress Mac, does he love publicity. He's back in the news again. So Smile Happy by Run Happy wins the Kentucky Jockey Club for Ken McPeak. So the next day, or within 48 hours or whatever, McInvale bet $10,000 to win on Smile Happy in the Kentucky Future Wager. He is the favorite other than the all others, not Jack Christopher. Corniche isn't even in the bet because of the situation with Baffert. So pounding him down to 8-1 and then bet $3,000 on Run Happy in the sire bet. So he horse also went way down in odds to 8-1. So he destroyed his own odds. He's getting terrible value on that. But nonetheless, you know, I just get such a kick out of him and all these crazy bets that he makes. Joe, the thing about Kent DeSormo, I totally agree with you, but you know, the factor that we're looking at now is presumably, I would imagine, he's sober. And, you know, alcohol abuse has been his bugaboo throughout his career. And I think he would admit that. And, you know, he went into a treatment program. I know it's not the first time, but, you know, just based on the fact that he's riding so well, seems to be back on top of his game, you would guess that one has something to do with the other. And that, you know, and you know, pat on the back to him if he's beaten this demon. But you're right. You know, he was always a terrific talent. And, you know, it's going back. I mean, it got so bad. Remember about this time last year, maybe the year before, he went out to Golden Gate Fields to ride because he just couldn't even get any mounts at Santa Anita. So over the 4 days, starting with Thursday, he was 6-for-14. He finished fourth in the overall standings at Del Mar with 10 wins. The win on the Hollywood Derby among Beyond Brilliant was his first grade one win since July 28th, 2019, when he won the Clement Hurst. So good for Kent DeZarmo.
And you guys hit on all the major points. So the only thing, that I'll add is that, you know, look at the California jockey colony now with Kent DeSormo, Johnny V announcing that he's going to go there. Jersey Joe, you know, Bravo left Monmouth when they had the whip issue or the whip question, you know, and he's been parked out in California. I mean, you know, I think that for the first time in a while, the jockey colony out in California is going to exceed the number of horses that are normally in those stake races. Usually there's only four or five horses in those races. And there's actually going to be a battle to see who gets to ride the non-Baffert horses out there. But it's good to see if Kent DeSormo has defeated his demons, or at least, you know, kept them at bay. Because I understand that, you know, when you're dealing with a substance abuse, they never really go away. You're just kind of fighting it day by day. Then I give, you know, kudos to him for getting his life together and giving himself a shot in probably what might be one of his last chapters of his riding career. I mean, he's no spring chicken. So the fact that he's able to win these grade ones like he did on Beyond Brilliant and others, you know, during this meet shows that he's dedicated to, you know, to his craft and wants to continue to win. And not that this means anything, but I started looking back over the past 10, 15 years, even of mounts, you know, of jockeys that have had mounts for us. And I don't think we've ever used Kent DeSormo. I think just our paths have never crossed. And not that that means anything to him, his brilliant career. But I can't even give you an anecdote of like ever even meeting the guy, you know, because we just never have raced in the same venues. But I'm glad to hear that he's doing better. Obviously he's riding very strongly. And you guys hit on all the major races that occurred over the weekend. I'm really looking forward to today's entries for Cigar Mile this weekend, because you not only have the Cigar Mile, you have the Demoiselle and the Remsen. And if you want to talk about two races that have potential for Oaks and Derby candidates, respectively, 9 furlongs. For these juveniles, you know, so early in their career, 9 furlongs, that's a marathon, especially on that dirt track at Aqueduct during the wintertime.
I mean, just to follow up on that, you know, being a jockey is an interesting career because you could do it for a long, long time. And I wonder, you know, we talked about Kent DeSormo's substance abuse issues, and that's definitely a big part of why he's had the kind of up and down career that he's had. But I wonder if he just burns out too, you know, because it is so hard to be a top level jockey for decades. Like, that's why I marvel like guys like John Velasquez and Mike Smith. Now they're starting to be a little more selective with their mounts, at least as they get into their 50s, but it's hard. It's a hard job to do for 10 years, let alone 20, 30, 40 years. So I'll be interested to talk to Kent and ask him, you know, beyond the issues with alcoholism, is it just burnout? Do you just not necessarily have the hunger to go for decades at a time being a top jockey? Because it wears on you for sure. So that would be an interesting discussion as well. We're going to talk about the Cigar Mile card in a little bit. They did have a couple of interesting races over the weekend at Aqueduct. I believe that was Reeve McGahee's first Graded Stakes win in the Cumley with Bees and Honey. Yeah, so that's interesting. And also in the Fall Highway, Hopeful Treasure, Mike Catalano was a Parks guy, got his first Graded Stakes win as well. So we always like to see those new trainers and those smaller level trainers jump up and get the big money in one of the Graded Stakes at these big tracks. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. As I mentioned before, the Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale is January 10th through 13th. One graduate of the 2021 January sale, Regal Glory, who we didn't mention, just won the Matriarch Stakes on Sunday at Del Mar Grade 1. She was purchased by White Birch Farm, Peter Brandt, for $925,000 and has won two other stakes for her new ownership this year. She's just one example of future stars who have gone through the ring at Keeneland January. And I know John's got a few horses on the radar coming up at that sale as well.
You're right, Joe. And based on the strength of the November sale, we went ahead and looked at our own inventory and said, okay, what would be a nice filly or mare to sell? And we're selling a mare named Warm Breeze, who's in foal to City of Light. And if you haven't seen a City of Light foal yet, go out and either get there in person or look online, because he had a tremendous November sale, Keeneland November sale. And so we're putting that mare Warm Breeze in the sale. And then we're also putting a Caravaggio 2-year-old filly in the sale, who has, you know, very good pedigree, especially in Europe. And Bill, you'll appreciate this because you're a man of the puns. She's a Caravaggio. And as we all know, I shouldn't even have to say it to our brilliant audience, but Caravaggio was a very famous painter, back in the 15th century, Italian painter. And he also, used to get in skirmishes everywhere he went, because he would, whether he would get drunk or what have you, but he was always quick to have a fight, and then would get escorted out of town. So between the painter and the fact that he was always in trouble, Bill, we named that filly Brush with the Law.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
So she's hip number 56, for those of you who are keeping track at home, at the Keeneland November sale. And we're very much looking forward to selling these two opportunities at the Keeneland sale. And, hopefully the strong market will continue to roll into 2022, because you couldn't get anything done buying in 21. Prices were just crazy.
Is she out of a constitution, Mayor? Because that would make the most sense.
If only that would have been the piece de resistance, as you like to say.
Why are you not consulting me on all these horse names, John?
We'll have to start doing it. Actually, speaking of horse names, I know I'm going to segue into something that we didn't, necessarily have on script, but Writer's Room, the filly yeah. Just breezed out of the gate, got a Bullet Breeze, and is now ready to be entered. And if I remember correctly, and Joe, I know I sent you the link on, yes, she will run on December 11th.
All right.
December 11th at Aqueduct in a New York special weight race.
Yeah. I'll definitely be there if it's on the 11th, for sure. We're really excited about that. And also excited about Keeneland January, which is January 10th through the 13th. So we'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion 3-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning 4-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Secure your mare's future. Maximum Security.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Two first crop sires at Ashford had big weekends. Cupid, we talk about Cupid almost every week, had his first graded stakes winner with God of Love in the Grade 3 Grade Stakes on Sunday at Woodbine. He's also the sire of 2-time stakes winner The Sky Is Falling and Graded Place Desert Dawn, and he'll stand for $5,000 at Ashford in 2022. That's great value for a horse that's really, really coming out. I'm not just saying that because Coolmore is a sponsor. I notice it in my travails following horse racing these days, that Cupid is really coming on. And also Practical Joke, who's had a really good year, had his fourth stakes winner with Tejano Twist in the Lively Shively Stakes at Churchill Downs on Saturday. And then later, Jackie the Joker became his 21st worldwide winner at Charlestown. Lastly, we're going to be talking with Ken McPeak about Cocktail Moments, who I mentioned before. Broker maiden impressively by 9.25 lengths after coming from 10th on the Churchill backstretch on Saturday. You hardly ever see that. She's the 9th TDN Rising Star for Uncle Mo. Another Kenny McPeak trained daughter of Uncle Mo that we'll talk about is En Foutant, who won the Fall City, as I said. Uncle Mo continues to have monster success and will stand at Ashford for $160,000 in 2022. John?
Yeah, the fact that Uncle Mo just continues to crank out these top horses isn't really a surprise, because the marketplace mandates that the horse Uncle Mo himself stands for $160,000, which is the fourth highest price going into 2022. And when you're looking at the tried and true stallions of who throws runners every single year, Uncle Mo is always in the top three, if not top five. And he's, his horses, Progeny, they run on the dirt, the turf, the poly, long. We even saw one, you know, that won the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint Championship of, you know, of Wesley Ward's. So, you know, they can do everything. And I think that at that price point, even though it's really expensive, $106,000 is a lot of money, he's still great value. Especially based on his age. I mean, he's going to be around for a long time. So there's going to be Uncle Mo's that are going to be hitting the front page of the of every all the respective publications for a long time.
Yeah, and get in on Cupid now, because I guarantee you, if he keeps having this kind of success, it's going to go way up from 5,000. So it's definitely the time to get in on the ground floor still with Cupid for 2022.
Yeah, and Joe, he's a son of Tappet. It's not like he's a son of Out of the Barn or something like that. Yeah. I mean, you know, probably the, one of the greatest sires of sires in our lifetime.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, I was shocked to see he was at 5,000, especially with the success he's having now. We had some news on the freshman sire beat this week because Gunrunner has broken the freshman sire earnings record. He passed Coolmore's Uncle Mo. Uncle Mo had held the record since 2015. Is that right? I feel like he's been standing longer than that.
No, that's really right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just, he's so established, I guess. I feel like that Uncle Mo has been around for much longer than that.
He's a young gun. That's what we were saying before, compared to the other stallions at the top of the list. He's young in comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. So, so prior to Uncle Mo, the record was held by Tappet, who set the mark in 2008. Gunrunner broke the $3.8 million mark Sunday. He took over the earnings record when Tom Amos's Shotgun Hottie won a $92,000 maiden special weight at Churchill Downs Sunday, becoming Gunrunner's 22nd winner. Obviously, a big part of this is Steve Asmussen, who's done so well with Gunrunner's Progeny in his first season. It's interesting because we've talked about this before when we talked about Gunrunner, that he is a horse that got better as a three, four, five-year-old. So if these horses, if his horses are going to get better as they get older, watch out, man, because he might be a top five stallion in the world in the next year or two, if that's the case. But I know John has a lot of thoughts on this. What do you think, John?
Well, Joe, I think one of the things that is helping Gunrunner is the fact that he was bred to so many top mares in his first crop in 2018. And I don't know if this was by design or by luck or a combination of the two, but I noticed that the majority of the mares that were bred to Gunrunner, who, again, as you mentioned, was a later developing route horse that, you know, the further that he went, the better, stronger that he got and the better he ran. So, again, I don't know if it was by design or by luck or a combination, but a number of mares that were bred to him in 2018 had much more sprinter resumes than what you'd expect when you breed to then a $70,000 horse. Normally you'd think, okay, well, I'm going to breed, you know, all these great one distance horses to him, but that wasn't necessarily the case. And I think that's really helping get some of these earlier developing two-year-olds out of Gunrunner's first crop. You know, Gunrunner himself earned $16 million in the racetrack and ran not only everywhere in the United States, but obviously went overseas and really impressed there as well. So he was a sturdy horse. He was, you know, a horse that stayed sound for a long time. He ran in all the big races, and he probably can lend that success to the fact that he's got some of the strongest broodmare sires in a pedigree between Candy Ride, Giant's Causeway, Quiet American, and Leafard. I mean, those are three or four of the top broodmare sires in over the past 30, 40 years. And I think that adds a lot of stability to the gene pool. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that, you know, he was bred to a number of great, like I said, turn of foot kind of mares in his first year, but he had an even bigger book of mares, just number wise, in 2019, when he stood for $70,000 again. So you would believe, based on that pattern, that he would have another strong year in, you know, with this upcoming group of two-year-olds for 2022, and that his first crop horses as three-year-olds should continue to relish the opportunity to run two turns and go far. I know just anecdotally from talking to Mark Cassie, he's very impressed with Papa Cap, you know, his horse that ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and he really feels like that he's a quality grade one, you know, Derby campaign kind of horse. And that's just one person out of the dozens of top runners that he's had this year. So I think that Gunrunner, you know, has a tremendous opportunity to be one of those next great stallions. And they're doing the right thing as far as, you know, watching what kind of mares are being bred to him, and really doing an outstanding job by design, I think, of getting these kind of mares to him. But the proof will be in the pudding, Joe and Bill, because he went from, you know, $70,000 his first 3 years down to 50, which is kind of normal for the industry. You reduce in year three or four, depending on the marketplace. And now they're jumping up to 125,000. Well, that's rarefied air. When you start getting to $100,000, $125,000 stallions, you're talking about the top five stallions in the country. And that's Into Mischief, Tappet, Curlin, the aforementioned Uncle Mo, and Quality Road. They all stand for above $125,000, which is where Gunrunner is. So this crop coming up, 2022, is really going to be the litmus test, in my opinion, because that's rarefied air when you start getting, you know, over $100,000, $125,000
in stud feed. Yeah, like I don't remember the last sire that from just one crop got up to six figures. Like Nyquist last year, I think, got up to 75,000 after he had that big first year. But I don't remember the last one that got over six figures just based off of 1 year of horses on the track. And, you know, like I said, it's definitely possible that he's going to get even better as time goes on. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how his two-year-olds develop into three-year-olds. I think we can check back on this discussion about six months from now and see if they really took that step forward like we expected them to. Because like I said, if they do, watch out, Nick, because he could be one of the top stallions in the world if that's the case. Just to piggyback off that, if you look at the first crop sires list, which you can look at on the TDN website, number two is Practical Joke from Coolmore. Number three is Connect from Lane's End. So two sponsors, second and third on that list. Not saying it has to do with them sponsoring our show, but it doesn't hurt. And, you know, Connect has been a very, very, I don't want to say pleasant surprise, because I think he had a little bit of buzz leading into his first crop year, but I think people forgot about him a little bit earlier in the year, and then he really came on the second half of the year. So he's very exciting. And that brings us to the Lane's End Stallion of the Week, which is Code of Honor, who will begin his stud career at Lane's End in 2022 with a $10,000 stud fee. Six-time graded stakes winner, including, as we remember, the 2019 Run Happy Travers and the Jockey Club Gold Cup against Elders. And before he joins the roster at Lane's End, he'll make his final start in Saturday's Grade 1 Cigar Mile at Aqueduct, which we're going to preview in a little bit. Best of luck to Code of Honor and Lane's End. We'll be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Connect, the next in line to carry on Lane's End's tried and true stallion tradition. A Grade 1 winning millionaire son of Curlin. Physically impressive and dominant on the track. Winner of the Grade 1 Cigar Mile and the Grade 2 Pennsylvania Derby, where he defeated Gunrunner, Nyquist, and Exaggerator. With multiple six-figure yearlings in his first crop, up to $360,000. Connect. A proven winner on the track. A proven stallion in the making.
The TDN Writers Room was brought to you by XBTV. This week's XBTV Workout of the Week is Medina Spirit, who worked 3 furlongs in 35-4 at Santa Anita on Friday. You can see that under my words right now. He was, of course, last seen running second in the Breeders' Cup Classic. This was his first work since that start, so you can check out his workout and more on XBTV. And it looks like Medina Spirit is pointing for the Saudi Cup, which makes a lot of sense, as an early season goal next year. And he, you know, he's the kind of horse that I think, I don't think he's going to win three-year-old champion, as we've discussed. So I think that he's, you know, Bob Arum's going to want him to come out guns blazing next year to try to get one of those trophies. So check out that workout and more at xbtv.com. We also have Gulfstream coming up. Lots of good horses that you can see work on XBTV. Got the Cigar Mile workers as well. So go to xbtv.com for all of your workout viewing needs. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we are thrilled to welcome back to the program Kenny McPeak. Thanks so much for coming on, Kenny.
No, you're welcome.
So we're always glad to have you. You're coming off a huge weekend at Churchill Downs. Pretty much dominated the Stars of Tomorrow card with a really blew up that card early on with the big winners in the third and the fourth race. So we're going to get to the two-year-olds, but I wanted to ask about En Vuitton first, because she won the Fall City on Thursday. Second year in a row, she won it by 6 lengths, which is pretty interesting. You said after the race that she was going to be bred to Gunrunner if she didn't run that well in that race. Now she did, and now she blew that race apart. What are the plans now for her?
Well, you know, if you space her races well, she does well. I mean, I think we came back a little quick when we ran her in the Spinster, but 6 weeks is really great number of timing for her. And you've got to, if you stick to that, she gives you a really great performance. The half partner or Walking L and Three Chimneys owner in partnership. And of course, Three Chimneys stands Gun Runner. And Gonzalo Torrealba, the principal at Three Chimneys, is always wanting really good mares to Gun Runner, but he also likes racing. So I think that Scott Leeds and him are in agreement that they'd really like to race her next year. They'd really like to get a grade one win out of her. You know, she's kind of knocked on the door in those. And we are going to do a roundabout, she's going to Dr. Bramlage in the next few days, actually Thursday. And we're going to let him just do a full workup on her, make sure that we're not missing anything. And as long as the report comes back that she's good for another year campaign, then she'll run next year, from what I understand. And, you know, ultimately it'll be up to Gonzalo and Scott Leeds, you know, once they see Dr. Bramlage's opinion. But from my viewpoint, she's in great shape. And, you know, her race was a super run the other day. And hopefully we see her in the spring.
And Ken, one of the other things before we get into the two-year-olds that are up and coming, one of the other bits of news that came through over the past couple of weeks was the sale of Swiss Skydiver, who has been, you know, one of your top horses in your illustrious career, winning the Preakness and Eclipse. And you picked her out for $35,000 as a yearling, and she sold for $4.7 million. What was going through your head as she was entering the ring and as the numbers started getting bigger and bigger and bigger?
Well, it's easy to be proud of that kind of work. You know, honestly, it's disappointing that we sold her, but, you know, I understand. And Peter Callahan's one of my favorite clients, and he, you know, it's a business, and, you know, he made the decision that he wanted to test the market with her. And I actually thought she'd bring more than that. And for me, I think she could race next year as well. She was sound in my viewpoint, but, you know, look, sometimes it's good to sell when there's a, you know, a good market for a horse. And I'm really proud of her. I'm real pleased with the people that purchased her. Katsumi Yoshida, they've got four mares in Japan that I won grade ones with. And so they've really got a great program, and she's going to be treated like the queen she is. And, but, you know, it's bittersweet. I mean, I get a commission for the sale, so that's not a bad deal either. I mean, so I pay bills, but at the same time, you know, there's a piece of you that doesn't want to let that go, but it is part of the business. And so, I mean, when we sold Take Charge Lady two decades ago, you probably remember that filly. She ended up Broodmare of the Year. You know, obviously freaky talented filly like Swiss Skydiver. And when we sold her, it was a similar feeling. So I kind of been there, done that.
Right. I'm going to turn the page a little bit to the Stars of Tomorrow that you unveiled over the weekend. On Saturday, like I said, there were two back-to-back blowout winners at 20+1. I'm going to ask about Cocktail Moments first. She got a higher figure. Watch the race, listeners and viewers. If you haven't seen it, watch the race. Crazy impressive. Was 10th early, blew past everybody in the stretch, and won off by 9 1/4 lengths. You hardly ever see that, especially at 26-1. What was your reaction to that effort, and what's your outlook on her going forward?
Well, that was a pleasant surprise, but I'll tell you, she had been training fantastic going into the race. And I have this habit of you know, when we typically get a young horse ready, we don't force the issue. We let them come together. I like to get a race under their belt. I'd almost call it a schooling race, the first race. So I'm not very well known for first timers, because I like a horse to break, tell the rider, look, take a little bit of a hold, settle, wait, finish. And when they do that, they take dirt in their face. They've got all this adversity. All of a sudden, they're in the middle of all this adversity. And you lose races doing that, but you also teach them. And the young horses that we've gunned away from the gate and we send away from there, they don't learn as much as the ones that take the dirt, they learn to negotiate the traffic and then finish. Well, this filly had been training great. And I told Corey, I said, look, don't force anything. Just let her break clean, get her a nice rhythm, wait, and then finish. Well, she finished. All right. She came like a bullet. And this has been a really happy filly the last couple of weeks. She trained really happy. And to be able to predict that first time out is difficult. I can tell you that the one I ran earlier, the one I ran the race before, I bet on her. And I'm not much of a player. I don't bet on a lot of horses because I think it obstructs my judgment sometimes. And I don't want to be mad at a rider because I miss the exact or whatever, you know, so I don't typically wager, but I bet $20 across on Park on the Nile. And I told Corey, I said, you let her leave there. If she leaves clean, let her run. And if they don't go with her, shame on them, because they're going to have a hard time catching her.
Right.
And she won off easy too. So anyway, so those were a lot of groundwork went into that. And, you know, Dominic Brennan gets the young horses ready in Ocala, and he had gate work prepped on a bunch of these when they come up, and, you know, the whole team effort's all there.
Yep. And Joe, you mentioned, you know, that horse. I thought that Smile Happy was also really impressive, winning the Kentucky Jockey Club, the Grade Two, which gets points for the Kentucky Derby as well. Tell us a little bit about Smile Happy and the fact that, you know, again, you picked him out as a yearling and what the what his campaign, undefeated campaign, has been like for you so far.
Well, the win at Keeneland wasn't a surprise at all. Mm-hmm. This horse is trained and out-trained about every horse he's worked against. And he's a physically imposing horse to see and to be around. And he's fast. I mean, but I stretched him out long first time out, and he handled it like a pro. And for a horse to go second time out against some of the horses that he ran against, I think there's some fitness there that's still needed too. I think he's going to improve off this race, although we're going to shelve him for a little while. And I think you're going to see even a better horse when we get to spring.
And Ken, just to follow up on that, you know, you have to figure with the female family being Pleasant Tap and just that begets such, you know, long running horses, that his future has got to be bright, you know, going a mile and an eighth, a mile and a quarter, hopefully, you know, as he gets older.
Well, he's got the mind of a good horse, which, you know, he handled little adversity first time out, cut through horses, finished fast. And same thing the other day. I mean, Corey did have him in a bit of a garden spot on the outside of those horses where he just went right on around them. And I think he's the kind of horse that you can circle the field and win anyway. So we'll see how all that goes. You know, he's got an interesting pedigree in that. And John, I know you studied pedigrees over the years. He's out of a relaunch, Second Dam.
Right. Yep.
And then Grostark. And then Bold Rulers in the fourth dam, and that he's actually Funny Side,
right,
is in the fourth dam,
right.
And so you know that he's got that in there. But when you looked at him as a yearling, there wasn't much black type to be. But actually, the first three dams were practically blank, a Turf Paradise winner and one other stakes placed horse. But I told Mike Mackin when we bought him, he said, "Oh, I run happy. Yeah, it's got no page." I said, just go look at the horse. This is a serious horse. And Hunter Valley prepped him, and Xavier Moreau bred him, and we're real excited to have him.
A couple other exciting two-year-olds. Honestly, this has been one of the stories of the fall, I think, is Ken McPeak's two-year-olds. Rattle and Roll and Tis the Bomb. Rattle and Roll won the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity, obviously had to take a step back, missed the Breeders' Cup. How's he doing? And also Tis the Bomb, who you had entered on Saturday and scratched from the Kentucky Jockey Club. He won the Bourbon at Keeneland. What's up with those two, and what are the next steps for them?
Well, we'll start with Rattle and Roll. So we were getting him ready for the Breeders' Cup, and I honestly wasn't all that keen on taking him out there, and I wasn't shy about saying that. But I didn't like the way he cooled out after his last workout before going to Breeders' Cup. He was going to have to travel. I thought he was a little dicey and behind. We found a little bruise in a foot. Did a little more research and felt like that he just wasn't 100% in the back. And I made the decision that we were going to stop on him and wait. And we've given him, he's had over a month now, right at a month. He's at Keeneland at the moment. And he's going to do some light stuff at Keeneland right now. And then we're going to ease him to Florida. He's going to go on a truck to Florida. Actually, he and Smile Happy will go on the same truck. Actually, it's going to be interesting. Tis the Bomb, Smile Happy, Rattle and Roll. I better insure that truck.
You better make sure it's two trucks, right?
but anyway, So that truck's headed down with all those guys and several other really nice horses. And they'll go to Gulfstream. They'll go to Silverleaf Hills, our training center in Ocala, actually south of Ocala. And they'll lay over there for probably a week or two. And then I'll forward them on to Gulfstream. They'll all train at Gulfstream for the winter. I'd say Rattle and Roll ahead to, I think the fairgrounds would be a good launching place for him because he likes the longer stretch. And I think he's a horse that needs a little more stretch to run. And then Run Happy, if I had to say today, is probably going to lean towards either Gulfstream or Oaklawn. And then Tis the Bomb, probably Gulfstream. And back to Tis the Bomb. So that was a bit of an unusual deal. That horse is, he had a little scratch on a leg that we knew about and we've been watching. We'd been sweating it and making sure that it wasn't a problem, cleaning it up real good. And we left him open for a few hours the morning of the race and it filled back up. And he's got a couple of nicks on the inside of one leg. And it just looked, it was a bit unsightly, but it just wasn't 100%. It was I looked at him at 6 o'clock in the morning, the day of the race, looked perfect. In hindsight, we probably should have left him wrapped all morning, but we let the air get to it a little bit and the thing got inflamed and, it just wasn't worth, you know, bringing him over. Not 100%. It felt like that morning we were okay. And then by 1 o'clock, it didn't look right. By 2 o'clock, okay, let's pull him out. I was saddling horses and Greg Geyer, my assistant, was saying, we need to talk about this one before we bring him over. And I said, well, just take him out. We'll fix that up and deal with it another day. Yep. And of course, I don't know if he'd beaten the other horse anyway. So who knows? I mean, you know, these are good problems to have, but
I could have had the exacta.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's tough thing to do sometimes when horses are right on top of a race like that, but it was the right thing. It's no problem.
No, and one thing's for sure, you've always done the right thing by the horse, which is why you've been able to build your resume the way you have. And Ken, just for the listeners, you know, you have 12,000 starts, 1,815 victories, and you're over $95 million of purse earnings. So this time next year, you very well could be, you know, approaching $100 million in horses' purse earnings. Is there one or two horses that stand out that helped you get to that $100 million mark?
You know, certainly Tejano Run when I was young was a horse that he was in the early crops of yearlings that I was allowed to buy. I mean, I think I'm probably most proud of finding a lot of these horses at auction, even for modest prices, because I mean, I learned the first 10 years that I trained, I struggled, but I convinced Roy Monroe to let me buy yearlings for him. And he let me buy, my first yearling was a Lord of War filly that ended up running. She ran first, second, and third and 15 stakes in her career for Roy and I. And then he let me buy Tejano Run. So Tejano Run kind of launched me. But then after that, I had Take Charge Lady and Repent and Harlan's Holiday, which was not a horse I purchased, but a horse that certainly was really talented. And Sarava was a pleasant surprise on Belmont Day. And that horse was, I think we did well getting that horse ready for that one, but I don't know, you know, training horses, it's not rocket science so much as, but you got to get good horses to train. And I'm in a unique stage right now where they're giving me bigger budgets and, you know, and I'm actually still buying for the people that are what I'd call the under 50 people, under 50,000. I still like working the back end of the sale. I mean, I wear out a pair of tennis shoes, working the front and the middle and the back. And Dominic, you know, Dominic's probably deserving of as much credit as me because Dominic's been in the trenches with me for 30 plus years.
Wow.
And people, he's one of those unsung heroes. He's a rock solid Irish horseman. And I met him when he worked for Tony Everard in Ocala years and years ago. And, He's, you know, my Robin to Batman, I suppose. And he works the sale. He loves working the sale. He tells me, hey, you need to see these over here in this barn and those over there in that barn. And then I make the final call. But, you know, being able to work those auctions with a guy like Dominic has helped us get to nearly 100 million. And we're not going to rest on that. We're going to keep. I'm going to lay something out there that most people, I don't know if they want to hear it or not. I'm going to do this for 10 or 11 more years. I'm going to train till I'm 70. At the age of 70, I'm probably not, I don't know that I'm going to train past the age of 70. Of course, unless I have three horses like I've got in the barn right now.
Right.
Anyway, but I'm looking at doing it till I'm 70, and I want to continue to work horse auctions for people. And I'd like to do it worldwide. I'd like to work the Australian auctions. I love going to Tattersall's. I love going to Goff's, Arcana. I don't think that training horses is that hard, especially if you've got your team and you know what you're doing. You've got to find the talent. And there's a lot of trainers out there that I'm going to tell you are as talented or more talented than me that have never gotten the stock. And so clients are out there that are changing trainers. You need to change your stock, you know, because you got to get good horses to put you on the map. And I'm fortunate they've given me the opportunity to do that for myself.
Right. No, that's a great way to put it. And you're right. You have to have the right team of people. You have to have the right horses for sure. And you've certainly shown a talent for finding and unearthing these horses, especially at what we would consider to be a modest budget, you know, for most of your career. I mean, you've picked out a number of great horses for, like you said, that under $50,000, breakpoint. What do you think you need to do to complete your resume in order to get into the Hall of Fame?
Well, nah, that's okay. Well, what if I hadn't taken that 9 months off? I'd had Einstein and Curlin, and there was about 10 or 11 graded stakes winners in that crop. And people don't realize that my mother was terminal during that period. So that was like one of those life decisions, and you make a left turn instead of a right, and it would have changed a lot of things. I'm not worried about being in the Hall of Fame. That's somebody else decides all that stuff. My mother always said, just keep winning, son. That's all you need to do. Just keep winning. Keep worrying about, work hard for the people that want you. Don't put too much energy into the people that don't. And best thing you can do is keep winning. And, I've got some great clients, and they're wonderful to work for. And I'm fortunate I don't have to deal with the difficult ones, because I've got enough good ones that I can say, hey, I'd rather work hard for this guy over here. So it's good position. It's taken a long time to get here.
I wanted to shift the discussion a little bit to Lasix, because this has been kind of something that you've pounded on over the years about how Lasix takes a lot out of the horses. They don't necessarily need it. You want to get rid of race day medication. Bill Finley did a story after the Breeders' Cup about how there was no story at the Breeders' Cup when it came to Lasix, and it's not really that big of a deal anymore. Do you see more trainers coming around to your side on that and realizing that horses don't necessarily need it all the time?
Well, you know, our horses are running just as well without it. And I can go way back on this one. Okay. When I was a young trainer, I claimed a lot of horses for a client named Ray Cottrell. May he rest in peace. Great guy. Ray liked to run his horses a lot, and his nickname was Running Ray. And it wasn't anything for Ray to want. He wanted to run one back in 6 days. 10 days was a layoff. And so I would claim horses off guys. And the first thing I would do is check their hydration level. And then if I thought a horse was dehydrated from an overuse of Lasix, the first thing I would do is tell my veterinarian, we're either not going to run on it, or we're going to treat with what I call the pinch. You know, I wanted to give a half a milliliter. And today they quantify how much you can give, 3, 5, whatever. And I would give a half a milliliter, and we were winning like 26% off the claim by removing the Lasix. And so I think what it does is it's detrimental in that it dehydrates horses, especially the ability to run them often. When you run a horse on it, you've got to rehydrate. It takes a little more time. You know, I think people came up with the bounce theory was the Lasix dehydrating a horse that's causing them to run back a little flat. And not to regress, there are horses that need it. There are horses that you could justify it on, but I think the percentage of those horses is small. And I do think that there's a place for it in the sport, but probably certainly not in the stakes level, but certainly in the claiming or even allowance races that you could justify if a horse really needed it, that you could, you know, maybe make a case that allowed trainers to use it in some capacity. And there are other countries, I think in Brazil and Argentina, they have two tiers where they don't run in LASIK on LASIKs in group races, but the common average day, everyday horses can utilize it in the allowance and the maidens and such. You know, there's a higher power or somebody in higher authority than me that's going to need to sort through those issues. And I'd love to be involved in it. So whatever it takes to resolve that. But without it, we're doing fine.
And let's take that same question and kind of broaden it a little bit, Ken, to, you know, to the proposed rules and regulations of HISA and USADA. What are your thoughts on, because you race in so many different jurisdictions, what are your thoughts on unifying the rules and medication rules and fines and making it a simpler process for everybody?
No, I think it's fantastic stuff. I think they need to unify the license. Mm-hmm. You get a license. It's a license that, I mean, if I buy a driver's or get a driver's license in Kentucky, I can drive all over the country, and then allow reciprocity to take effect when you have a violation. But these rules need to be streamlined. There's no question. They need to streamline them with a horseman on those committees that are making those decisions, that has the at least the input or the power to say, hey, wait a second, time out. I mean, you're going too far, whether it's right or left. I don't know how you what analogy you would use on that. But at this point, there aren't horsemen sitting on those. And that bothers me. And look, I'd clear time to be on it. I think that they need to hear certain feedback on how we handle, whether it's ownership, whether it's medication, kind of an out there. I think the rules for overages, an overage violation for a trainer shouldn't be a suspension. It should certainly be a loss of person. You should fine the trainer accordingly to, let's say it's a $100,000 race and the trainer makes 10%. Well, that's a $6,000 fine. Not a suspension, because you can't shut down racing stables and then put that money towards something positive, whether it's retirement, Thoroughbred retirement foundations, and eliminate all this positive test. Overages aren't positive tests. They're simply therapeutic medications that have either not metabolized correctly or fast enough, or somebody's made a timing error. So these kind of things need to be addressed, and the industry needs to do a better job. You know, every time that, you know, let's defend Bob for a minute. Bob, those are therapeutic overages Bob Baffert had. And I don't know how they've verbalized or defended themselves, but I had a betamethasone overage in Florida myself. And we knew how it happened. We knew why. And they subsequently dropped the whole issue. But it didn't make headline news. And it certainly didn't get him barred from New York and, you know, the Derby Trail. So I think that there's some things that need to be addressed on that should not be happening.
Right.
So let's bring the rules together, and absolutely, let's put the right people making the right decisions to try to get, you know, the sport so that it's certainly streamlined.
And Ken, you bring up a very good point with Bob Baffert and the situation that he's in. But what our listeners need to understand is that, you know, you have very, very strong resume that you've earned over the years. And if you go on thoroughbredregulatoryrulings.com, you know, which tracks overages and issues that and violations, you know, since 2005, you have 14. That's it. 14. And the majority of them are administrative. They're not testing overages or positives or anything like that. So, you know, so how have you been able to do it so well to stay within the rules and still have your phenomenal resume, whereas other trainers just, you know, can't do it that way?
We practically don't run on anything. I mean, I don't keep clenbuterol in the barn. I don't keep ace promazine. I've fired assistant trainers that were using ace promazine without my permission. I don't like any of it in the barn. Naproxen and anything that's going to get in the way of or going to cause a problem on that, I just try to keep it out. And We have a very simple, it's a very simple program, our barn. It's not complicated. If a horse has an issue, we figure out what it is. And if they need time, they go to the farm. And, you know, every trainer's got a different approach. You know, I've had periods in my career where I used steroids because steroids were legal back in the, you know, the early 2000s. And then when they said they weren't, then we quit using them. But everybody else was using them, and there was a proper time and place to utilize them. The injection of hock joints and knees and ankles, sometimes it's necessary. I mean, you get a horse that has knee surgery or ankle surgery or any type of surgical procedure done, you know, Dr. Bramlage is going to say, follow this up with a what they would call maybe a something that helps the cartilage, which we might use a Halartan would be one product, but that's a helps generate cartilage. But they might also use a little Vetilog, which Vetilog will test positive or it test as an overage. But those kind of things, you know, you don't push it. We don't push it at all, but I don't know what other guys do, and I don't know how they approach it. But, you know, look, if the trainer's sloppy, they certainly need to be penalized for being sloppy. But I do think that there's a distinct difference between an overage and using an illegal drug. And most of these, 98% of them are overages. And we need to stop, I guess, the terminology, it's a positive test. And it goes out to the press, oh, he had a positive. No, he had an overage. So I think that how you verbalize it is important. And how you deal with an overage versus an illegal drug should be extremely different too. And like I said, I think if they disqualify a trainer from a race, whatever they would have been rewarded is what they should be fined. If you were going to win a $10,000 race and the trainer makes $6,000 or the owner makes $6,000, the trainer makes $600, fine him $600 and take the purse away and don't suspend him, but put that money towards something positive. I don't know. That's just my viewpoint.
I think we can all agree on that. There's a lot of nuance to it. When I asked Travis Tiger when he was on the show, I asked him about how the difference between overages and illegal drugs and trainers being worried about being lumped in with the guys who are using illegal drugs. And I think that's what you're talking about for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, a lot of times it's just a simple mistake. I've had feed tubs get switched and the horse had naproxen in the feed tub and the horse tested as an overage on naproxen, which was, you know, simple mistake and unfortunate.
Yep. All right. So best of luck with those 2-year-olds the rest of the year. And next year, Kenny, we always appreciate having you on. Thanks for the insight. Thanks, Kenny. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, gang.
Yep. Thank you very much. I'm going to call Mark Cassie and tell him to pull all of our good 2-year-olds out of Florida and send them the Turfway because I don't want to run against your big heads.
Okay. Why don't you send a couple of them to me, John?
that's 2022. That'll be 2022.
Okay. Sounds good.
Right, thanks so much.
The Green Group guest of the week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group guest of the week, Ken McPeak, will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select The Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made The Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes. All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. We mentioned last week, got to give another shout-out to West Point for recently getting their 50th winner of the year, which is a major accomplishment for any ownership group. And with a few weeks left in the season, West Point horses have already earned over $4.1 million. They still got a lot to look forward to this year as their superstar Flight Line prepares the Grade One Malibu Stakes. We're all looking forward to that and seeing what he can do from there, because he's one of the most exciting horses in training. We're waiting with bated breath to see him again. And it's only a little less than a month away. So we're excited for that. Congrats to all the partners on a phenomenal year. I think the best may be yet to come still. So as I talked about in the beginning, we really only had these two big weekends left in racing. Then we get a little bit of a break until the Derby Trail and a three-year-old season kicks in. We had the big weekend at Churchill and Del Mar last weekend. This week, we have Aqueduct to become center stage. And that's, I'm always partial to Aqueduct. It's the first track I ever went to in New York. So I like when it gets to be center stage, at least for a day. And it's going to be a great card on the Cigar Mile day. Cigar Mile is going to have a bunch of big horses in it. I'm interested to hear who Bill and John are excited to see. But just as supporting stakes, they also have the Grade 2 Remsen, Grade 2 Demoiselle, Grade 3 Go for One Handicap. And then also this weekend, Gulfstream's championship meet starts. It starts on Friday, actually, with a pair of three-year-old stakes on the turf. And then this weekend, I believe Saturday, is the Claiming Crown as well. So that's something to look forward to. And then Los Alamitos, don't want to slight them. They also have the Starlet and the Los Al Futurity coming up this weekend. Bill, who are you looking forward to seeing?
I think the answer to that is American Revolution and the Cigar. And this race normally comes up good. It's coming up really good this year. Ginobili coming off a second place finish in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Independence Hall off a blowout win in the Fayette. Code of Honors, we mentioned. Following C coming back after running third in the Breeders' Cup. But to me, American Revolution is the one where there's the most upside. And we don't know that much about him. Last time out, he's a New York bred. He just blew their doors off on the Empire Classic, winning by 11 and three quarters. Like Independence Hall, he's by constitution, very well bred. I could see this horse using this as a springboard to a really serious four-year-old campaign next year. So, and if, especially if he beats this field too. I mean, you know, you can look at what he's accomplished so far and say, okay, he only won a New York Red Race, et cetera. But to win this, this is a legitimate Grade One. And if he were to win it, he would have to really run big. But it's not going to be easy. As I mentioned in here, there's several very good horses, and also Independence Hall as well, the other constitution. He's a horse that, you know, again, kind of a poor man's Maxfield. He's never quite done it on the big day, always been in the sort of the wrong place at the wrong time. But his win in the Fayette last time out was very impressive, and maybe he's ready to put it all together too.
I'm looking forward to the Demoiselle, and primarily because you look at that race, and over the past few years, you've had a really superior runner come out of the Demoiselle. And in 2020, it was Malathat who won the Demoiselle going a mile and an eighth. And then in 2017, it was Wonder Gadot. So it is a springboard, or could be a springboard, for a top filly to come out of that race. And when a horse, when a filly especially runs nine panels in December of her two-year-old year, that gives her a tremendous leg up to be able to handle the distance, especially on the tiring dirt course of Aqueduct this time of year. So I don't know if the Demoiselle is going to be a big field. I don't think so. But there could be a horse that jumps out of there and that all of a sudden we're talking about in some of the Oaks previews coming next spring. Bill, I think you hit on all the major horses that I would talk about in the Cigar Day, in Cigar Mile. And as far as, you know, Florida goes, Joe, you have a couple of these stake races coming in. And then there's also a couple of turf stake races for two-year-olds coming in, one of which we have, you know, two fillies in. But there is some really, really nice up-and-coming horses in the Wait a While, which is the two-year-old filly race. You have Gunboat, who's a Warfront homebred of Stuart Janney that Shug McGahey trains. Brendan Walsh is bringing in Sunstrike, daughter of Dark Angel, a lot of people in the States don't know who Dark Angel is, but he is a very accomplished sire over in Europe and continues to, you know, they continue to bring over progeny of his and who run well here in the States. We have Lemieux, who won impressively in a Florida bred stake race. And there's almost a full field in that wait a while stake. So I think opening weekend of the championship meet at Gulfstream is also going to be one to watch. That's not news. I mean, it's certainly on everyone's radar, but this is going to be a really great, I think almost last weekend of top racing that we have going into the end of the year.
Yeah. It'll be like a little transition into the winter months. So next week we'll celebrate that we got through all of the really hardcore racing of the year. And we have a couple of weeks to talk about, I don't know, I guess we'll come up with it. But yeah, I mean, Gulfstream's races are always really exciting. Like you said, they have 9 horses in the Wait a While, 12 in the Pulpit on Friday. Love some good Friday stakes action. And as you guys talked about in the Cigar Mile, you know, I don't know that there's necessarily like a huge marquee name that you would expect in a typical year, but there's a lot of up and coming horses who have kind of just been bubbling up under the surface and now might have their star turn. Chief among them is American Revolution. I think the mile is a little too short for him. He just strikes me as this kind of long striding horse that wants to go a mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter. Obviously, there's no real opportunity to do that right now for older horses. And he's still talented enough to win. I just wonder what kind of price he's going to be, because he's coming off of that 109 buyer in the Empire Classic. So he might be a little bit overbet at a distance that I think is a little too short for him. But yeah, Independence Hall, it'd be nice to see him break through and get that big win. You know, it'd be honestly fitting too, because he really came on the map at Aqueduct, if you remember, as a 2-year-old, and into his 3-year-old year. He had that big win in the Jerome, and he's back at Aqueduct trying to make his mark as an older horse. Ginobili obviously ran well. Being second to Life is good. Olympiad is another one, too, that you guys didn't mention that I think has a very bright future. He's only run, I think, three or four times. He came back off of a long layoff to run very well, went second to Baby Yoda in the summer at Saratoga, and then won, that's John's favorite horse, and then won a pretty good-looking Keeneland allowance as well. So very excited to see him. Following C, we talked about, you know, it's stretching out back out to a mile after his win in the Vosford. There's a lot of very, very interesting horses. I think the pace could go a lot of different ways. It's a fascinating race, the Cigar Mile on Saturday. So I suggest you definitely get involved. Like I said, there's a lot of good stakes action in the undercard. So definitely like seeing Aqueduct get the spotlight for one day. And it's going to be a fantastic day of racing. Like I said, will help us transition into the winter months as we get ready for the Gulfstream Championship meet, which starts to take center stage, I think, next week. I think next week all the New York trainers and jockeys will be down there, so we'll have lots to talk about there as well. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. A few highlights from Legacy this year: they sold 90% of hips offered at Keeneland September and 88% Keeneland November. That's a great number, but not as great as 100% of hips offered at Facing Tipped in February and 100% of yearlings at Keeneland January. So the Keeneland January sale is coming up as well. I expect them to do well and have a very, very enticing consignment as well. So congratulations to everybody at Legacy for getting through a very, very busy and hectic sale year. And we'll see you guys at Keeneland January for sure. Be right back after this message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
Backstretch workers are the backbone of the thoroughbred racing industry. Without them, racing would not be possible. The New York Racetrack Chaplaincy provides vital programs and services to all the workers and their families, like sponsor a family, the food pantry, as well as other recreational activities and events. You can help by visiting our website and donating today. Every dollar makes a difference to those who give everything to the sport that we love.
We're getting close to the end of the year, and there's so many great groups that are looking for money to help fund their programs. And I just wanted to personally thank everybody who donated to the New Vocations Giving Tuesday event. Not only did they reach the $25,000 matching mark that we had hoped, they blew through it and exceeded it, by thousands of dollars. So thank you to the 130 plus donors who made contributions, financial contributions to the cause. And Anna Ford and her team for assembling just one of the top programs, to get these horses off the racetracks and repurpose them. I can't thank you enough. It's very heartfelt. I do appreciate it. And of course, you can continue to donate to New Vocations throughout the year. It is a charitable donation and you do get a deduction for it. But thank you so much from all of us, the Green family. And we just couldn't be happier that with the numbers and the kind of response that we got from you guys. So very heartfelt. Thank you.
Well, by the same token, we have a New Vocations stall in memory of Ben Massam, who was our news and features editor at TDN, who passed away a couple of years ago. We love Ben very dearly. Sue organized this. I thought it was a great tribute to him. And I just wanted to thank people who have donated in this past week to Ben Stahl, John Himes, Skip Anderson, friend of the show, and Ed Rosen as well. So thank you guys for your generous donations to Ben Stahl. And if you want to donate, you can go to the TDN website and under that little hamburger menu in the top right, you can see Ben Stahl, which is at the top of the features sub menu. So definitely a worthwhile cause, as John, said about New Vocations. They do great, great work. And we love seeing those donations in honor of our dear friend, Ben. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale is January 10th through the 13th. You can look at the catalog at january.keeneland.com. Before we get out of here, I wanted to thank Randy Moss for filling in for me last week. Did a characteristically terrific job. It was a great show. I want to thank you guys for bearing with me. I'm sipping a little tea here. I wanted to show my mug. This is Layla. These are my two dogs. We got stickers for them all over my tea mug. So it's very warming and comforting as I try to get through this show. So thank you guys for bearing with me. I'll most likely be back next week. I want to thank Bill Minley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Kenny McPeak, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you all so much for watching. We'll see you next week.